Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer, reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. It's February 20th, 2017. We'll begin on the first page with an article titled, Council Candidates Look to Shape Decatur's Neighborhoods. This is written by Chris Luzvardi, a Herald and Review staff writer from Decatur. Over much of the past 2 years, the city of Decatur has not dedicated significant amounts of funding toward the demolition of vacant and unsafe buildings. Over that time, more than 100 properties have remained on the city's demolition list. The issue of neighborhood housing revitalization is something candidates for city council will need to consider if elected. 3 seats are open in the April 4th election, with 6 candidates seeking positions. The candidates include incumbent Pat McDaniel, along with current Decatur Park District Commissioner and Archer Daniels Midland Company Director of State Government Relations, Chris Riley, former Macon County Board Member and longtime Decatur Athletic Club Tennis Director, Chuck Kuhl, Millikan University Biology Professor, David Horn, ordained minister, Marty Watkins, and local businessman, Andrew Apel. Most of them agree demolitions can be necessary, but differ on how to go about placing a priority on what needs to be done. McDaniel supports demolitions where it makes sense to do so. Investing the city's limited funds on many of the city's blighted house stock would not be a responsible, sound investment for the community, McDaniel said. Investing $20,000 or more in some of these housing stocks does not make financial sense. Doing demos does more for raising property taxes. He would support a comprehensive neighborhood and housing revitalization program that is planned out well. This would help to stabilize housing in the inner city neighborhoods of Decatur, McDaniel said. Riley said not all the housing can be refurbished, so demolitions need to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. He did point to examples of where rehabbing a home can work, so seeking developers to help in those cases is something he would support. It's a conversation at least worth having, Riley said. We've got to start doing something and take the list down as quickly as possible. That way, we can open up properties for something. Kuhl would support demolishing the homes that are in disrepair as long as the money is in the budget to pay for it. He would not advocate raising taxes to pay for the demolitions. Decatur needs to be more attractive to live in, Kuhl said. Things can be done to improve Decatur by adding bike lanes, which is the type of thing that Kuhl said can help make Decatur a more vibrant community. Horn said one of Decatur's top focuses should be on neighborhood revitalization. There are more people who work in Decatur and live elsewhere than people who live in Decatur and work outside the city, Horn said. Thus, Decatur has the opportunity to grow the number of residents we have and will do so as we create a city that is even more attractive. Horn would start with developing a strategic plan that results, in large part, in safe, walkable, diverse, and attractive neighborhoods. Revenue from video gaming should be dedicated to neighborhood revitalization, Horn said. In addition, Horn would use social impact bonds that could be issued to help fund efforts to rehabilitate homes or demolish long-abandoned properties. The days of seeing boarded-up houses along our main thoroughfares and side streets must come to an end, and working together, a city filled with more vibrant neighborhoods is in Decatur's future, Horn said. Watkins wants to see the neighborhoods revitalized and jobs created, especially for youth, who he wants to be an asset rather than liability. Incentives could be offered for bringing vacant houses up to code, Watkins said. He said working with neighbors to improve empty lots can really help Decatur. I would like to see some houses refurbished and then sold at a reasonable cost to those residents who would qualify to purchase them, Watkins said. I would also like to offer some incentives to the landlords for them to reinvest into their properties that would help beautify our neighborhoods. April said that clearly there are houses that need to be demolished, whether it's because of damaged foundations, roofs that have been open for months, or other problems that have developed. However, he said more should be done to market them. An auction one time a year isn't enough, and incentives should be offered to drop tax burdens for the landlords, April said. You want them motivated to fix the problem instead of punishing them, April said. There are all kinds of opportunities to rehab existing homes. April said if demolitions do occur, it should be on a worst-first basis, rather than focusing on certain areas of the city. And a second article, also by Chris Lusvardi, on the front page, City's Big Structure Burden. Large buildings add to Decatur's demolition backlog. Vacant houses aren't the only type of building posing problems for some of Decatur's neighborhoods. The city's demolition list includes a handful of larger buildings that could eat up a significant portion of the funding secured for such purposes. Wendy Taylor lives near the former Koppenbarger School at 1500 East Condit Street. The school closed in 1997. The upkeep of the building is problematic as it is lined with broken windows, mold, and an unpleasant smell, Taylor said. It's an issue, she said. The city knows about it. It's no secret. A lot of money would be needed to restore the building, which Taylor said still has potential for at least some use. Having a community center nearby would benefit the Torrance Park neighborhood, she said. The Boys and Girls Club, 859 North Jasper Street, is too far for many of the children to cross busy streets without a car. If we could save the gym for a community rec center, we could hold basketball games, Taylor said. We tried to get the ball rolling, but it needs a lot of money. Taylor would try to fix up the building, but she doesn't have the money for it. If I won the lottery, then maybe I could help keep it up, Taylor said. The building has had limited use since the school closed, but it has fallen too far into disrepair and been a focus on the city's demolition list since 2014. Other large buildings proposed for razing include the former Woodrow Wilson Jr. High School at 1140 West Sunset Avenue and a former nursing home at 438 West North Street. The school has been closed since 1979, and efforts to find a user for it have not materialized. A warehouse on Grand Avenue that was destroyed in a January 2015 fire has been reduced to a pile of bricks, but remains an eyesore until it can be fully cleaned up. The outside appearance of buildings can be deceiving, said Susan Kretzinger, Neighborhood Services Administrator. Two apartment buildings on West Wood Street are on the demolition list, with the one at 722 West Wood one of the worst Kretzinger has seen. The roof is leaking, Kretzinger said. From the outside, she said it doesn't look that bad. Once inside, it's a whole different appearance. The plaster is coming off almost all the walls. Nearly 6 feet of water was standing in the basement. There are holes in the floors. It's probably one of the most deceiving. The cost to demolish the buildings is prohibitive, with the city having a limited demolition budget, Kretzinger said. We want to get the most out of the funding, Kretzinger said. We are weighing every option to try to make the money go further. The city would need several million dollars to clear every property on the list, but only has identified the possibility of being able to spend a little more than $1 million this year. Despite the problems, Taylor wants to remain in the area where she lives, so she's doing what she can to make a difference, including mowing grass and trying to keep nearby spaces picked up. I don't want snakes, Taylor said. I've put so much effort into trying to make a difference. I want to see the difference get noticed when the city is cleaned up, and I can be proud of it. I don't want to go anywhere. Photos accompany this article. A photo of the former Koppenbarger School at 1500 East Condit, which is being considered for demolition. Also the former site of a nursing home on 438 West North Street, which is among the larger structures on the city's list to be considered for demolition. Then, at the corner of Illinois and Grand, a large pile of debris, the former site of the Action Equipment Warehouse, was placed on the list of Decatur structures to be considered for removal after a fire destroyed the building in 2015. And finally, a photo with lots of graffiti, captioned, "Graffiti and broken windows mar the east side of the old Woodrow Wilson Junior High School." And also from the front page, this is from a Lee News Service writer, "New opioid causing growing problems in southern Illinois County." From Marion, "As the heroin epidemic continues to spread, officials in the southern Illinois county are monitoring the use of an opioid they say was recently introduced in the area and poses a higher threat of overdose. U-47-700, also referred to as U-4, pink or pinky, is a synthetic opioid with morphine-like properties that is 8 times stronger than heroin and can be purchased online from Chinese manufacturers at a low cost," officials say. The drug was introduced throughout Illinois in 2016. Since then, it has claimed the lives of at least 100 people in the state. One of those cases currently under investigation is in Williamson County, the county state's attorney Brandon Zanotti said. Zanotti said officials have been monitoring the new drug, which can be medically used as a painkiller, since it surfaced in November. Despite being banned in Florida, Georgia, Ohio, and Wyoming, Zanotti said the drug is technically legal in most states, including Illinois. "It's very dangerous and very strong, and until recently, it is technically legal because it's being made in Chinese labs and people are ordering it online," he said. "So in November of last year, the federal government made it a scheduled drug, so awareness is already starting to grow." Illinois Senate Bill 702, introduced by Senator Kyle McCarter, Republican from Lebanon, works to include U-47-700 as a Schedule I controlled substance, which marks the drug as having a risk for potential abuse. Like heroin, it's not legal, and it can be in a powder or tablet form when it is in its natural powder state, and it kind of has a light pink color to it, hence the nickname, Zanotti said. The drug can be snorted, ingested, and incorporated into heroin, which increases the likelihood of an overdose. What they do, cutting it into heroin, it lowers the cost for the dealers, while also making it more potent, and I guess gives more of a euphoria for the person buying it, Zanotti said. "The issue we have is heroin on its own is already deadly enough, but with this U4, it is raising the bar and making it extremely deadly. I think there have been around 100 deaths directly related to U4 that we know of, and probably more." Williamson County Coroner Mike Jr. Burke said he can confirm only one case in which the synthetic substance was identified in toxicology reports. "I've been fortunate that I've only had one," Burke said, "and I know it's coming. It just hasn't hit here yet, at least in Williamson County." Although there have been no arrests in relation to the new drug in Marion, Sergeant Justin Dwyer, who spearheads the Marion Police Department's narcotics unit with Officer Jesse Thompson, said officers are conscious of its potential threat. "We know that it is becoming prevalent in the use of cutting heroin in as a replacement due to its toxicity or its potency," Dwyer said. "Somehow, even over the last couple weeks, it's become a pretty common conversation among our drug users. Even though it has been around for 30 or 40 years, it is becoming new to the area." And finally, from the front page, AP writers write, "Immigration crackdown outlined by Homeland." The Homeland Security Department has drafted sweeping new guidelines aimed at aggressively detaining and deporting immigrants living in the U.S. illegally, according to a pair of memoranda signed by Homeland Security John Kelly. Homeland Secretary John Kelly. The memos dated Friday seek to implement President Donald Trump's directive to crack down on illegal immigration. Kelly outlines plans to hire thousands of additional enforcement agents, expand on the priority list for immigrants marked for immediate removal, and enlist local law enforcement to help make arrests, according to a person briefed on the documents, who confirmed the details to the Associated Press. The surge of illegal immigration at the southern border has overwhelmed federal agencies and resources and has created a significant national security vulnerability to the United States, Kelly wrote. He said apprehensions on the southern U.S. border had seen an additional surge of 10 to 15,000 per month from 2014 to 2016. The memos leave in place one directive from the Obama administration, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, DACA, which allows young people who were brought into the country illegally as children to stay and obtain work permits. The program has protected about 750,000 immigrants since its inception in 2012. Trump has previously indicated his desire to end the program, but at his news conference last week indicated that he would show great heart toward the program. A U.S. official familiar with the documents did not dispute the accuracy of the memos signed by Kelly, which were originally scheduled for release Friday before they were postponed for White House review. A White House official said the administration has raised objections with the documents and is working with Homeland to finalize the policy. The official was not authorized to discuss the process publicly and insisted on anonymity. Under the draft guidelines, Kelly seeks to expeditiously hire 10,000 more enforcement agents and 5,000 Border Patrol officers. Seeking to fulfill Trump's campaign promise to build a wall along the Mexican border, Kelly also calls on Customs and Border Protection to immediately begin planning, design, construction, and maintenance of a wall, including the attendant lighting, technology, including sensors, as well as patrol and access roads. He describes the wall as necessary to deter illegal immigration and calls it a critical component of Trump's overall border security strategy. He says the department will prioritize for more immediate removal those who have been convicted of a crime, charged with a crime, committed fraud in connection with a matter before a government agency, abused any program related to public benefits, or have not complied with orders to leave the country. Joanne Lynn, senior legislative counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, criticized the proposed guidelines as a Trump style of immigration enforcement, in which due process, human decency, and common sense are treated as inconvenient obstacles on the path to mass deportation. The Trump administration is intent on inflicting cruelty on millions of immigrant families across the country, she said. And a few selections from What's Happening Today include, under the health category, health management resources, informational sessions, at 5:30 p.m., Sarah Bush Lincoln, Center for Living, in Mattoon. You can call 217-238-4774. Mobile mammography from 8 a.m. to 2:45 p.m., Sarah Bush Lincoln Clinic in Sullivan. Call 1-800-639-5929 for an appointment. Nutrition education class from 10 to 11 a.m. in the Decatur Public Library Madden Auditorium. Call 217-424-2900 for further information. This is presented by the University of Illinois Extension, and classes include hands-on learning, cooking demonstrations, and recipe sampling. Soups On from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Sarah Bush Lincoln Center in Mattoon. Reservations are required. Call 217-238-4774. Under support groups, Alcoholics Anonymous, Back to Basics, at 8 a.m. Central United Methodist Church in Decatur. Alcoholics Anonymous, Mustard Seed, 7 p.m., First United Methodist Church in Decatur. Alcoholics Anonymous, Road to Recovery, from noon to 1 p.m. at St. John's Episcopal Church in Decatur. Narcotics Anonymous, at noon, 420 South Franklin Street, Decatur. Narcotics Anonymous at 7 p.m., Second Church of God in Room 10, Decatur. Overeaters Anonymous at 7 p.m., Room 561, St. Mary's Hospital, in Decatur. And tomorrow's highlight, free tax help from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m., in the Decatur Public Library. Free electronic filing of state and federal tax forms for families with $50,000 or less in total income and individuals with $25,000 or less in total income. For further information, call 217-424-2900. And from the local page, alleged choking nets arrest. Man faces felonies for allegedly battering woman. Huey Freeman writes from Decatur, when a 25-year-old woman told Lauren Stamps to get out of her vehicle and removed her keys from the ignition, he allegedly responded by wrapping his arms around her neck and pulling her hair. Stamps, 27, then dragged her out of the car in a north side parking lot, threw her to the ground several times, and repeatedly punched her, according to the victim and a witness. He is being held in jail on $15,000 bond pending his preliminary hearing March 8th. At his arraignment Wednesday, Stamps was found to be indigent and assigned a public defender. As a condition of his bond, Stamps has been ordered to have no contact with the victim or go to her residence. Police were sent to the parking lot of the shuttered Kmart store, 1155 East Pershing Road, about 9 p.m. February 9th on the report of a domestic battery incident. The victim told police that after Stamps dragged her from the car, he once again put his arms around her neck, said an affidavit by a Decatur patrol officer. A witness told police she saw a man dressed in a gray sweatshirt was arguing with a woman dressed in black in the parking lot. He began hitting her, got behind her, and put his arms around her neck, the witness told police. When police talked with Stamps, who was visibly intoxicated, he reported that during the argument he took the keys from the victim because he thought she was going to mace him. Stamps was arraigned Wednesday on 6 felony counts, 3 of aggravated battery in a public place, and 3 of domestic battery with a prior domestic battery conviction. He previously was sentenced to a 5-year term in the Illinois Department of Corrections for aggravated domestic battery in a 2008 case, a 100-day jail term for burglary in a 2009 case, and a 2-year supervision term for possession of a stolen firearm and reckless discharge of a firearm in a 2006 case. And Lenore Sabota, Lee News Service writer, writes from Normal, ISU hopes community will weigh in on its future. ISU reaches out to community. Illinois State University wants the community's opinion about its future. The college is updating its strategic plan called Educating Illinois. Officials want to know what people, including those who live off campus, think about the challenges facing ISU and what they expect it to look like in 15 to 20 years. The survey is at www.educatingillinois.ilstu.edu. The deadline for completing the survey is Friday, February 24th. Brian Beam, one of the 4 co-chairs of the Educating Illinois Task Force, said President Larry Dietz asked us to consult with the campus community, and that includes our local communities. Input from alumni is also being sought. This is the fourth update since the first version of Educating Illinois was approved in 2000. Sam Catanzaro, another co-chair, noted the progress made at ISU since then, thanks in part to goals set in that plan. The six-year graduation rate at ISU has risen from 55.1% in 2000 to 73.4%, he noted. That is an amazing increase in that time span, said Catanzaro, Associate Vice President for Academic Administration, Policy, and Faculty Affairs. Increasing diversity was another goal in the original plan. Catanzaro said 11.5% of students enrolled in fall 2000 reported having a non-white background. That has doubled to 23% in the fall of 2016, he said. Comments from participants in roundtable discussions during a public forum on February 14th in the Bone Student Center included expectations that ISU will have more international and out-of-state students, expanded academic programs in high-demand fields such as cybersecurity and health, and a greater number of online courses in the next 15 to 20 years. Not surprisingly, considering Illinois still doesn't have a budget more than 6 months into the fiscal year, finances were seen as a major challenge facing ISU in the years ahead. But other challenges cited included competition for students from other states and the need to replace or renovate older buildings. Officials expect individualized attention to continue to be a hallmark of ISU. Co-chair Danielle Miller-Schuster said the question is, what does individualized attention mean in the year 2030? Miller-Schuster, Assistant Vice President of Student Affairs, said, "Our hope isn't to change the identity of the university, but to build on its strengths." After information from the surveys and public forum is compiled, the task force will reach out to specific groups with more focused discussions, Catanzaro said. The task force expects to have a first draft of the plan by this fall and a final draft ready for approval a year from now. And from the local A3 briefs for today from Decatur, Constant Contact. A SCORE Constant Contact workshop will be 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, February 22nd in Millikan University, ADM Scoville Hall, Room 109. The cost is $15 and the registration deadline is Tuesday, February 21st. The speaker will be Bernie Rose, owner of Always Connected Marketing. For information, call 217-424-6297. Also from Decatur, Service Show. A social service share show will be from 2:30 to 4 p.m. on Tuesday, February 21st, in the Salvation Army Community Hall, 229 West Main Street. The free event is made possible by the Good Samaritan Inn, Northeast Community Fund, Salvation Army, and University of Illinois Extension. Other participants include Catholic Charities, Decatur Housing Authority, Decatur Township General Assistance, Oasis Day Center for the Homeless, and Webster Cantrell Hall. For more information, call 217-877-6042. We'll take a break now and return with the second half hour after the break. Thank you.